Welcome to season 13 of Digital Learning Radio. I'm Laura, and I am so happy to be joined by my co-host, Catherine.
Hello.
This season of the podcast, we're continuing conversations of sharing what is inspiring us on our ongoing story of learning. This week, we're hearing what's been inspiring Catherine, and as ever, I'm excited to hear all about it.
I can't wait to share. First, I want to circle back to last week's episode, and Laura, you talked about immersive audio learning experiences. Any updates or new thinking about implementing the Inspiration Walk?
Okay, honestly, not yet. I still haven't made the 2-hour commitment to try out the other immersive audio experience for getting unstuck, but I would still like to. And additionally, I still just haven't quite figured out how to utilize an outside nature walk during the brutal Texas summer that is upon us. So I'm thinking of just letting go of that idea for now.
Very reasonable.
It's getting hotter like by the second. Yeah. So yeah. I did, though, like something that you said last week about making the connection to Ingrid Fattel-Lee's Joy Spotter's Guide that prompts you to, you know, get outside and notice joy in your surroundings. And so I kind of forgot about this resource. I have shared it in the past with coaches during months that seem like they need a little bit of extra joy. So I left myself a note to pair these resources for an October meetup that I'm already working on to maybe give coaches the opportunity or the option to complete either the audio inspiration walk or the Joy Spotter's Guide to get them outside, moving, thinking, reflecting during a stressful time of year, and also give some choice. So this is a pretty lengthy stay tuned, but stay tuned.
Okay, that sounds amazing.
Also, sort of related update, I know last week I shared the Lola Tone music as a nice background soundtrack, but as I was digging further around on the D-School site, I stumbled across two Spotify playlists created by them for the classroom. One is labeled Active, so it's music to support creating and physical activity. It's bouncy and upbeat. The other is Reflective, which is quieter and designed to act as background music during small group discussion. So there's more information shared on their site about what makes for good music in the classroom or PD room. And since we are quickly approaching a big presentation heavy summer season, I was excited to find some new, very eclectic tunes for active or reflective sections of my sessions. So I'll link those in the notes for sure.
Well, what fantastic shares, and sounds like a good playlist find. And I do have to shout out and give you credit for the Lola Tone soundtracks for everyday adventures. I'm so excited about that for an upcoming session as well. So
hooray.
Thanks for that.
Of course.
Okay. Before we get into this week's share, Laura, what's your quick win of inspiration for us?
Okay, so my quick win did not come to me quick enough because I learned about it immediately after I needed to use it. So last week when I was talking about the immersive audio learning experiences and how I wish that there had been a transcript option available, and as it turns out, I could have easily generated one for myself and I didn't even know it. Ooh. So I learned that in Microsoft Word, and this is the web version only, not the desktop version, there's this option to upload an audio file and have it transcribed automatically. And I actually created a document with these steps with screenshots of how to do this using the Tango Chrome extension, which I will link in the notes as well. But basically, you find the dictate microphone icon in your Word doc and you select transcribe. Then you're prompted to upload an audio file. It takes a few moments to process, and then it just spits out a transcription. Now, this was, remember, that 15-minute walk. It was a 15-minute file, and I will say a lot of it was reflective music, but this cranked out in less than a minute. Wow. It was really fast. And so you see a preview of the transcript in this side panel, and then you just select Add to Document. And it gives you the options to add just the text or include speakers or include timestamps or all of them. And then it just adds that text to your document along with a link to the audio file above it. And it did a pretty good and accurate job. And again, I was mostly impressed with how quickly it worked. So I was a little sad to learn about it just a little too late, though I am typically a Google lady also. Big shout out to Microsoft for this truly quick win.
Oh, that sounds incredible. And yes, I forget about Microsoft, but I know they have some incredible options. Yeah. So thank you for finding that and for using Tango to show others how to do that.
Double win.
Nice.
All right, Catherine, let's get into it. We are, of course, using our reflective protocol to guide the conversation. So I'll be asking you to consider the what, so what, and now what of your share.
I'm ready.
Let's start with the what. Tell us what is inspiring you to learn this week.
Today, I'm sharing ideas about the Building Thinking Classrooms framework, and my thoughts are inspirations and conversations from a true hodgepodge of resources, books, in real life workshops, podcasts, videos, and conversations.
Sounds great. I can't wait to hear more and hear about this hodgepodge of learning. So let's pull up our timer and in 60 seconds or less, give us the gist and tell us about the Thinking Classrooms framework.
The Building Thinking Classrooms framework is a result of Dr. Peter Lilledahl's 15 plus years of research working with hundreds of teachers and thousands of students. His framework consists of 14 practices divided into 4 toolkits, and his work is all about thinking in math classrooms. But today I'm sharing how I'm inspired to try some of these practices in PD sessions, and I hope others see how this framework can be applied to all content areas. So here are the big ideas. Toolkit 1 is all about student behaviors. Toolkit 2 is about instructional practices, and these strategies in these two toolkits create thinking cultures in classrooms. Toolkit 3 is about getting into a learning flow, and Toolkit 4 delves into assessment practices. All of these categories apply to all content areas, but for PD sessions, the most relevant practices are from the first 3 toolkits, and I can't wait to share a few ideas.
What perfect timing. I'm so excited to know more about this. I've heard bits and pieces about this, kind of like you, from a variety of sources. I think you had me at this phrase, creating thinking cultures in classrooms. So I'm so excited to hear more. Let's dive a little bit deeper and tell us more to answer. So what about thinking classrooms is inspiring you to learn?
Here's my learning journey of inspiration. If you're a longtime listener, you may remember that I'm a former math teacher and I still follow a lot of math friends on Twitter. I've seen one of the first practices in Peter's framework in my Twitter feed for years, and that's the importance of VNPS, or working on vertical non-permanent surfaces, also known as whiteboards or marker boards. So earlier this year, our friend Aaron gave me copies of Peter's books, and I've loved reading all about his research and the details and intentionality about these practices. And our math consultant colleague, Julie Frizzell, created sessions based on the Thinking Classroom toolkits, and I attended all 4 of her sessions. And then more recently, I heard an interview with Dr. Lilledahl on the Cult of Pedagogy podcast, and that episode emphasized the relevance of this framework to all content areas. So I am now inspired to go for it and design my PD sessions with some of these practices in mind. This framework moves away from the I do, we do, you do method, which is pretty much how I taught math and how I've also developed especially tech-heavy PD sessions. And Peter's work centers on how to move kids from passive learners, people who know how to play the game of studenting, to engaged thinkers. His framework describes ways to design classrooms, make decisions, and explore practices that create conditions for thinking. So who doesn't want that in classrooms or professional learning sessions? And I'm inspired to use this framework to create conditions for thinking.
Ugh, I'm inspired to just keep listening, though maybe I'm playing the game of studenting. I don't know how much thinking I'm doing, learning from you. But no, I have heard, like I said earlier, bits and pieces of this. And I think I kind of tuned out because I am not a former math teacher, mm-hmm. but opposed as a former English teacher. I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm great. I'm glad this is like revolutionizing the math world. That's not really my world. And so I am really excited for you to give us kind of your thinking and your analysis of how this can work for PD sessions and things beyond the math classroom, because mm-hmm. everything you're saying, I think, is aspirational and fantastic. So mm-hmm. I want to know more. So let's dive in, get us started with the first steps. Tell us about that very first toolkit one.
Before sharing the toolkit, I have to tell you about Dr. Lilladol's research method. To develop the 14 practices, he started with what was already happening in classrooms worldwide, which he called institutional norms, and then did the exact opposite to see what happened. So it sounds like an awesome rebel, right?
Yes.
And so if the norm was students sitting, he made them stand. If the norm was answer all students' questions, we stopped answering the questions, and so on. And so he said the results often came before the explanations, but once he discovered a practice that worked, he tested it with other teachers and other grade levels and all across the countries and made certain that there were consistent results.
How interesting.
Yeah. So Peter calls each of these 14 practices a macro move. And then for each practice, he shares several micro moves, which help implement that practice and smooth transitions. So side note, I will be admiring and acquiring those phrases too, macro and micro moves.
I like that.
Okay, so let me get you into toolkit one.
Sure.
So Peter suggests you implement these three practices all at once. And again, this toolkit is all about learners' behaviors, and the factors are begin with a thinking task, frequently form visibly random groups, and then use vertical non-permanent surfaces. And so I want to dig into that third practice a bit more.
Yeah.
And first, Peter's research was fascinating, and he studied results from using horizontal whiteboards, vertical paper, horizontal paper, and notebooks. But using the vertical whiteboards was the clear winner. Standing is better than sitting, of course, and having the freedom to erase is powerful and leads to more risk-taking. But an interesting observation in the research finds that when students are standing at vertical whiteboards, it takes away their anonymity and keeps them more engaged. But the idea I really want to hold on to is that using vertical whiteboards increases knowledge mobility. Now, knowledge mobility is how information can be shared within and between groups. If all group members are standing, no one is trying to look over a shoulder or over at a laptop or upside down or at a weird angle. And so if you're in a typical classroom space, you can all see the same work at the same angle, and you can quickly peek over at others' work, which is absolutely encouraged in thinking classrooms. In addition, being able to get hints from other groups decreases reliance on the teacher as the only source of knowledge in the room. And then that also reminds me of a favorite idea from the New Pillars of Modern Teaching, which is that in a traditional classroom, teachers serve as the funnel and the filter of the knowledge.
Ooh, I like this idea and this phrase of knowledge, mobility, and truly being that rebel and turning the usual practice upside down to where you are encouraged to see others work. And we always talk about, you know, authentic collaboration. And I feel like that is laying the foundation for that. Interesting. Okay, so I'm thinking about you. I'm thinking always about me. I'm thinking, okay, but what about their computers? Like, so everything I do, I feel like needs a computer. So I know you are a thoroughly digital person. What are you thinking about for marker boards and carrying around extra supplies? Or like, can we walk away from the computer? What are your thoughts here?
Well, I am rethinking this idea, but Peter's first book, Building Thinking Classrooms, was published in October 2020, bless his heart.
Oh no. Everyone stand up together and run and share a marker.
Yes.
Okay. Bad timing.
Right. So in 2022, he released a supplement to the book to consider different learning environments. This book shares how teachers can implement the practices with fixed seating and social distancing and in virtual, hybrid, or asynchronous environments. And he shares a lot of creative solutions.
Okay, cool.
But the idea that really captures my interest is instead of using a vertical non-permanent surface, use something like a Jamboard or a Google Doc for a knowledge feed. Ooh. Isn't that a great phrase?
Yes.
So the idea is for learners to have a place to see each other's work and to get hints. And so Peter suggests taking photos or screenshots of students' examples or adding additional text as people are completing the thinking and learning tasks. And I think that idea and practice will work beautifully in my fully digital sessions, especially webinars. And then I can invite participants to share their work anonymously and then encourage the use of comments or annotations to keep others thinking going.
I like that. And I also like that it isn't an entirely new concept. A lot of people are accustomed to being in a shared digital space, but I like the maybe rethinking of the phrase or even the purpose that this is our knowledge feed. Mm-hmm. Okay. I like that. I'm writing that one down. Mm-hmm. What about Toolkit 2? What do you have to share on that one?
All right, so Toolkit 2 is about instructional strategies, and Peter says these practices may be implemented in any order or tried concurrently, but start these after you already have the first toolkit down. So there are five practices here, and they are defront the classroom, answer only thinking questions, give thinking tasks early, standing and verbally, give check your understanding questions, and mobilize knowledge, which I sort of mentioned earlier. For this section, I really want to share ideas from the practice of defronting the classroom, which is all about how we arrange the furniture. And so, Laura, I hope you're already thinking about the art of gathering here, because this chapter also recognizes how a venue is a nudge.
Of course.
Peter's research uncovered the idea, which we also see in The Art of Gathering, that when you walk into a school and you see a traditional classroom, you know immediately what to expect, and that shapes your attitudes and behaviors. If you walk into a room with seats next to each other and no tables, you know to expect a lecture. And honestly, my behavior and attitude for that is probably I'm rolling my eyes and sighing. So Peter wanted to disrupt those automatic behaviors and nudges. So here's another example where he did the opposite of the institutional norm. He defronted the classroom. In a thinking classroom, desks are in clusters, and the goal is to position chairs in all different directions. The instructor moves around when talking to students and works to stay away from the front of the classroom. So Interestingly, we really tried this idea at Region 10 and all of our conference spaces, but we often go back to that very traditional front of the room presentation style. So obviously it's a hard habit to break.
Yeah. I was just thinking about that.
Yeah. Here's something else that Peter's research uncovered, and another layer. When researchers walked into highly organized classrooms with perfect rows, color-coded baskets, everything in its place, there was actually more difficulty generating thinking. Peter says thinking is messy and nonlinear and requires risk-taking. So a more relaxed space allows students to feel safer about taking risks.
Interesting.
I know we're often tied to our computers and a projector, but my goal is really to consider the setup of the space and stay away from the front of the room and really leaning into more of a comfortable space, which ties back to kind of the playful and joyful ideas that we've also been talking about.
Oh, yeah. This is a good section because I am uncharacteristically quiet and really just kind of thinking about this. I'm thinking about this summer when we get to be everywhere and kind of walk into a space that isn't ours and often are dragging chairs or tables to move them around and thinking about the intention in doing so here. Okay, this is good to remember. Okay, well, what about practices in Toolkit 3? Even though I just want to kind of sit here in silence and think about Toolkit 2, I can do that on my own. So let's do Toolkit 3. What's next?
Well, it is very hard to narrow down one idea per toolkit.
Yeah.
And this toolkit is very interesting, and it's all about establishing a flow of learning. So I really had a hard time getting to one here. The three practices are asynchronously use hints and extensions to maintain flow, consolidate from the bottom, and write meaningful notes. Peter says to implement these practices in order, one at a time, and to not move on until the previous one is established.
Okay.
So I'm not going to go in order though.
Look at you being a rebel.
Yes. A new idea and inspiration for me, and what I want to do now, is practice consolidating from the bottom.
Okay.
I did the exact opposite in my own math classroom, which is level to the top. When sharing a final solution, for instance, in a classroom, that process is often my most nuanced, advanced, sophisticated way of explaining things, which means I immediately left learners behind and the thinking stops then. In my PD sessions, I'm cringing now to think about all the times I've sort of rushed through the design of something. So in an EdTech PD session, I've said, oh, just click here, add this one little piece and you're done. And then learners are still trying to open the Google Doc. So yikes.
Yeah, I think we have all been there.
So I have a terrific non-math example of how consolidating from the bottom can look asynchronously. And that's in our current online course, Classy Canva, with Tony Vincent. Bingo, Tony.
Bingo.
So Tony creates a video of new content each week, and he begins the video by showcasing a few of our classmates' projects from the previous week. On each of the examples, he highlights just one or two features or design decisions made. And for me, a complete beginner, I can understand what he's demoing and why it works and how might I apply that technique. And I don't feel overwhelmed that he's showing these incredible examples from all of the experts in the class. And so I think that idea of consolidating from the bottom, starting where the beginning learners are, and then sort of moving up, is a powerful technique to admire and acquire.
Absolutely. That is a really great example. And yes, major shout out to how amazing Tony Vincent is in doing that. But yeah, that's a really great example and something that I hadn't really thought about. So you've given me several new to me phrases and things to consider. So I love that. Okay. I know that you said three of the four toolkits apply to PD sessions, but I got to know, what's up with toolkit number four? Will you tell us about those last few practices?
Okay. And of course, the last toolkit is about assessment, and the practices are evaluate what you value, help learners see where they are and where they're going, and grade based on data, not points. Now, obviously, these three practices can apply to professional learning sessions too. And the practice of seeing where you are and where you're going seems especially relevant. That one is all about formative assessment, self-assessment, goal setting. And yes, I want that as a part of all PD sessions. I'm bummed that we didn't have time for me to mention my reflections from the other practices, but I think there are so many terrific ideas that can apply to all content areas. So I hope you're feeling a little inspired too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I am remembering that I also own a copy of this book that I just happily put on my bookshelf where it talked about building thinking classrooms in math. And I was like, great book. That's going to live on a shelf. But I am certainly inspired to go through because, yeah, these are great practices and things that I really want to continue thinking on. So any other inspirations or anything else that you want to share?
I have two last things. First, and on theme and for you, the design of this book is so thoughtful and practical.
Hooray.
You can tell Peter knows teachers and has visited hundreds of classrooms. Each chapter begins with an issue and the problem that the practice intends to solve. And there are examples and research with engaging photos and illustrations. And then there's a Q&A section that is very practical, and you get a summary of the macro and the micro moves, reflections, and then you can skip the last part because it gives a math task to try, but it's all divided by grade levels. And so even though I'm no longer in the math classroom, I keep finding more nuggets of inspiration in these pages.
Very cool.
All right. So finally, here's another shout out to our colleague, Julie Frizzell, in a tiny commercial. We actually are hosting Dr. Peter Lilladol in October for a Building Thinking Classrooms conference. And I am so excited about the event. So I'll add the registration information and details to our show notes.
Please do, because that sounds amazing. And I love that he is coming to Regenton in October. Very, very cool.
I will be fangirling now.
Oh, Catherine, thank you for sharing this. Again, I am inspired to pull that book off of my shelf, flip through it, and really kind of think through some of these practices as we are going into summertime and lots of PD and really just wanting people to be thinking. So perfect share. I'm very excited to dive in more on my own.
Yay.
As you know, we want to launch further thinking and challenge each other to apply what we share as we consider now what. So now what? What are some next steps from here to incorporate ideas from building thinking classrooms into your work?
For something tangible that I can accomplish this week, I plan to create a concise list of the macro and micro moves just so I can reference them and include them in my upcoming PD sessions. I just want to see all the ideas in one place because there are so many great ones. There are some micro moves that I can make part of almost every session, and other practices will take a bit more planning and a little bit more intentionality, but I'm inspired to make this framework part of my own practice. Maybe not in the exact order as intended, but there are so many pieces I can pick up. So
yeah, great.
A list. And then also, I'm determined to try some random grouping for my sessions, which is something I don't usually do. So before our next recording, I want to get some cards and table tents printed and ready to go for my summer session. So I'll have groups ready to sort.
Okay, that sounds great. We'd also like to extend the invitation to you, dear listener, to share your ongoing story of learning as well. Take a moment to pause and think wherever you're listening from and consider, what ideas have you heard today that have sparked your interest and inspired further learning about thinking classrooms?
You may also find us on Twitter at Dig Learn Radio to continue the conversation and share your own learning that's inspiring you this week.
This season, we're dedicated to sharing our learning and the things that are inspiring us. We hope that when we share, the conversation and ideas will cultivate curiosity and inspire you to explore one of the resources, reflect on a question we've asked, or continue the conversation with us online. Reflect to consider the what, so what, and now what of your thinking. Share your learning inspirations and ideas from this episode and beyond.
We are, as ever, inspired to learn from Gail Allen and her work in the new pillars of modern teaching. She reminds us that when we share, we add a sentence to the story we communicate about ourselves to the world. Let's continue learning, sharing, and transforming. Let's get inspired.